Chapter 27. Trying hard to be normal, Ray took a long jog on a favorite trail, along the downtown mall, down Main Street to the campus, up Observatory Hill and back, 6 miles in all. He had lunch with Carl Merck at Bizu, a popular bistro 3 blocks from his apartment, and he drank coffee afterward at a sidewalk cafe. Fogg had the Bonanza reserved for a 3 p.m. training session. But the mail came, and everything normal went out the window. The envelope was addressed to him by hand, nothing on the return, with a postmark in Charlottesville the day before. A stick of dynamite would not have looked more suspicious lying there on the table. Inside was a letter-sized sheet of paper, tri-folded, and when he spread it open, all systems shut down. For a moment, he couldn't think, breathe, feel, hear. It was a color digital photo of the front of 14B at Cheney's, printed off a computer on regular copier paper. No words, no warnings, no threats. None were needed. When he could breathe again, he also started sweating, and the numbness wore off enough for a sharp pain to knife through his stomach. He was dizzy, so he closed his eyes, and when he opened them and looked at the picture again, it was shaking. His first thought, the first he could remember, was that there was nothing in the apartment he could not do without. He could leave everything, but he filled a small bag anyway. 3 hours later, he stopped for gas in Roanoke, and 3 hours after that, he pulled into a busy truck stop just east of Knoxville. He sat in the parking lot for a long time, low in his TT Roadster, watching the truckers come and go, watching the movements in and out of the crowded cafe. There was a table he wanted in the window, and when it was available, he locked the Audi and went inside. From the table, he guarded his car, 50 feet away and stuffed with $3 million in cash. Because of the aroma, he guessed that grease was the cafe's specialty. He ordered a burger and on a napkin began scribbling his options. The safest place for the money was in a bank, in a large lockbox behind thick walls, cameras, etc. He could divide the money, scatter it among several banks in several towns between Charlottesville and Clanton, and leave a complicated trail. The money could be discreetly hauled in by briefcase. Once locked away, it would be safe forever. The trail, though, would be extensive. Lease forms, proper ID, home address, phones. Here, meet our new vice president, in business with strangers, video cameras, lockbox registers, and who knew what else, because Ray had never hidden stuff in a bank before. He had passed several self-storage places along the interstate. They were everywhere these days, and for some reason wedged as close to the main roads as possible. Why not pick one at random, pull over, pay cash, and keep the paperwork to a minimum? He could hang around in Podunk Town for a day or two, find some more fireproof boxes at a local supply house, secure his money, then sneak away. It was a brilliant idea, because his tormentor would not expect it. And it was a stupid idea, because he would leave the money. He could take it home to Maple Run and bury it in the basement. Harry Rex could alert the sheriff and the police to watch for suspicious outsiders lurking around the town. If an agent showed up to follow him, he'd get nailed in Clanton, and Dell at the coffee shop would have the details by sunrise. You couldn't cough there without 3 people catching your cold. The truckers came in waves, most of them talking loudly as they entered, anxious to mix it up after miles of solitary confinement. They all looked the same, jeans and pointed-toe boots. A pair of sneakers walked by and caught Ray's attention. Khakis, not jeans. The man was alone and took a seat at the counter. In the mirror, Ray saw his face, and it was one he had seen before. Wide through the eyes, narrow at the chin, long flat nose, flaxen hair, 35 years old, give or take. Somewhere around Charlottesville, but impossible to place. Or was everyone now a suspect? Run with your loot like a murderer with his victim in the trunk, and plenty of faces look familiar and ominous. The burger arrived, hot and steaming, covered with fries, but he had lost his appetite. He started on his third napkin. The first two had taken him nowhere. His options at the moment were limited. Since he was unwilling to let the money out of his sight, he would drive all night, stopping for coffee, perhaps pulling over for a nap, and arrive at Clanton early in the morning. Once he was on his turf again, things would become clearer. Hiding the money in the basement was a bad idea. An electrical short, a bolt of lightning, a stray match, and the house was gone. It was hardly more than kindling, anyway. The man at the counter had yet to look at Ray, and the more Ray looked at him, the more convinced he was that he was wrong. It was a generic face, the kind you see every day and seldom remember. He was eating chocolate pie and drinking coffee. Odd, at 11 o'clock at night.